When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasen, the son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered the heads as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased in the least. My goodness. The purport here, transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Sri Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the battle at Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself spoke about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna, because it is spoken by the Lord, and the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha, because it is spoken about the Lord. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by his order. Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the garb of a devotee of Krishna, and therefore the versions of both Lord Krishna and Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India seriously understand such Krishna Kathas, and then after full realization preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. That will bring about the desired peace and prosperity in the world. Of course, there's so many things here. I don't know what the commentaries are of Vishnu Chakravarti. Several things. One thing is, of course, these were written before Prabhupada left India. So it's interesting, you know, the circumstances under which he's talking about these things. And someplace else I think he talks about this, about how, somebody does something horrible, but if he pleases his master, it's okay. So that what Ashwatthama did was horrible. Let me back up a little bit again. He knew that his father, Dronacharya, loved Arjuna more than he loved his own son, Ashwatthama. So Ashwatthama knew that. And he was kind of, I guess, tolerating that and accepting it. Okay, my daddy loves Arjuna more than me. Then Dronacharya taught all these military secrets and everything else to Yudhisthira and Arjuna. So what did they do? And they used their teacher's knowledge, and not even in like in a fair fashion, by using tricks and stuff then to kill him. And so it's understandable that Ashwatthama was really upset by all this. These guys, deserve to have to suffer some kind of pain, just like my mother is suffering and I'm suffering. First you steal my father's love and then you kill him, And so he's not totally unjustified in everything he does to get his revenge. But Prabhupada says he made too many mistakes for the son of a brahmana. As a son of a brahmana, he should have been a little more philosophical and peaceful about this. A kshatriya probably would have been forgiven because he was a passionate person and couldn't control himself in those circumstances. So he was punished. He had the jewel on his head cut off, and that decreased his prestige and fame and everything else. He was treated like an animal. So he was both killed and not killed. But it says that he'll stay alive all the way until the next Satya Yuga, and at that time he'll become the father of the next race of Kshatriyas. Krishna will give him that honor. So it's like he was chastised. He accepted it. I did something wrong. I'm sorry. And Krishna said, okay, be more careful next time. So Krishna immediately accepted him back, maybe even into the intimate circle of friends and so on. And also Kripacharya, of course, he was fighting against the Pandavas, Maharaj Parikshit accepted him as his acharya, and also the Pandavas. So even though he was fighting against the Pandavas, he was also accepted as their acharya, you know, later on. So, but during all this emotional disturbance, I think the battle was over, and Duryodhana was even lying down defeated. But then Ashwatthama had a sword from Shiva, he could get from Shankar. It was very, some kind of very special sword, and maybe it had its own kind of like intelligence to it, a smart sword. So then he went and chopped the heads off of Draupadi's kids, and I think he took them to Dronacharya and said, "Here are the heads of the five Pandavas." And Dronacharya thought it was the five, you know, Yudhisthira, Bhima, everybody else. But then when he found out it was the Draupadi's children, he was angry, upset. So Prabhupada says, sometimes a servant has to do some abominable thing for the master. Like Dronacharya maybe had to do this abominable thing for his master to satisfy his master. Like that. And so Prabhupada said then that the servant is not at fault, even though he has to do something abominable if he pleases the master. But he said in this case, Duryodhana was not at all pleased. Which in some ways too also indicates that Duryodhana wasn't the guy without character. You know? In many cases he showed he had some very, you know, very sincere character qualities like that, you know, and so on. You know. And by going through this whole experience with Krishna and everything else, he developed more character qualities. Even he advanced. Duryodhana and all of his brothers were Rakshasas. They took birth as human beings, and even they, being Rakshasas, very selfish, demoniac species, learned something by this whole experience, by Krishna's expert, you know, arrangement. So it's kind of like the other part that, you know, that everybody had then fallen down, had their backs broken, you know, chopped their heads off, everything else, you know, thinking this would help him. You know. But then the purport, can you see the purport again there? Over Lord Brahma, can you raise the purport within view on the screen there? Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so Prabhupada's just giving this general description here about, that doesn't go into the details of this particular verse, actually doesn't comment on it at all. But he comments on the general fact that the Bhagavatam is starting right after the Battle of Kurukshetra. Historically, the Bhagavatam starts where the Bhagavad Gita finishes. The Mahabharata goes a little bit later. It goes into the Shanti Parva and some later things like that. I guess it goes all the way to the disappearance of the Pandavas. Yeah, it does. Yeah, like that. But Bhagavad Gita finishes right at the end of the where the Bhagavatam starts. Prabhupada says the Bhagavatam starts where the Bhagavad Gita finishes, both historically and philosophically. So the Bhagavad Gita is Gita-Upanishad, and it describes Krishna as he who knows everything, he who is everybody's friend, he who creates and maintains and destroys everything. And so we should worship him. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is presented as, you know, is pretty much presenting himself in his Paramatma feature. For a moment he shows his forearm feature, and for even less time apparently he shows his two-arm feature in chapter 11, yeah, right after the universal form. So everything's there. Krishna the Virat Rup, Krishna as a Paramatma, Krishna as forearm form, Krishna as Somyavapu, form of Vrindavan. But the emphasis is really on you know, the Paramatma feature, like that. And so, you know, there's a God, he's a controller, but what does he look like? We don't know. How do we relate to him? We see his hand in things, there's no doubt about it. You know? So this is Paramatma. And then, and also to the final benediction Krishna gives, he was, surrender unto me, give up all this varna ashram, I'm your heart, I can guide you, you know, and I'll give you liberation, like that. You won't suffer. So Bhagavatam starts on, and even the beginning of the Bhagavatam is like that. It's very much in the first chapter, and we find like the words of Hokshaja and things like that, Janardana, and almost never, I think, we find them, you know, Krishna so much, you know, being directly described in the very beginning. And of course, later on, you know, it goes into describing the position of Krishna more clearly, even the first canto like that. You know, but the beginning is very much, I think, also very much Upanishadic and liberation, and then it gradually begins to expand that more than getting liberation from Krishna, yeah, we want to be able to get these relationships with Krishna. And then, of course, it gradually educates us over nine cantos through different incarnations and how we can hear their stories and enter into them. And if we do that properly and live our lives on the basis of what we're hearing in the 10th canto, if we can do this all in one lifetime, great, you know. Then we can actually, you know, awaken higher relationships with Krishna, different serving attitudes, more subtle serving attitudes. And, so the this Prabhupada is saying that the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita are both like Krishna Katha, you know. And then Prabhupada says here, Lord Chaitanya desired, he puts it in italics, right? And maybe he's thinking that these books are, well, of course these books are in English, you know. And his whole purpose is to preach in the Western world. That was his assignment from Bhaktisiddhanta. So what is he doing in India? In India, I think Prabhupada's attitude wasn't to preach to Indians, because that wasn't his service. Even when Prabhupada gave lectures in big Pandal programs all over India, he usually spoke in English, even though the majority of people could not understand English like that. He directly said that, because that was the task he was given. You know? There's some lectures of Prabhupada, Hindi lectures of Prabhupada, and to my limited Hindi, they're very sweet, you know. Maybe about like 50% or 100% more Sanskrit, Bhagavad Gita verses and things like that, Prabhupada's quoting. But his Hindi is very simple, very sweet. So sometimes he spoke like that, maybe also in Bengali. But because his service was to preach in the English language, you find so many times, you know, Prabhupada, even in big Pandal programs, many people who did not speak English. And Prabhupada says that he would talk in English like that. You know? So I would say even while Prabhupada was there, his consciousness was like that. I'm preaching in India because it's my mission to preach in the English language. So if I can train up like, you know, 500 more people to preach in my English language, then, you know, I can do even better work like that and so on. So of course, you know, this is one of Prabhupada's plans. You know? And so here he says, Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India, you know, under India, seriously understand such katas, and then after full realization preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world, like that. So here Prabhupada's you know, kind of paraphrasing the verse. He said, Lord Chaitanya says, so he's paraphrasing Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 941, Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manusha Janmayar Janma Saartika Kari Karapara Upakar. So Bharat Bhumi, you know, the land of Bharata, Hoila, he does, Manusha, human being, Janma, birth, Yar, take, yeah. So somebody who takes his birth in Bharatvarsha as a human being, Janma Sa Artika, Artika is gain, right? Kar to do. He should obtain the goal of that Janma, the Arta of that birth. By taking that birth, he should do that. Then he should act for the benefit of other people like that. You know? So very, and the purport Prabhupada talks about how Lord Chaitanya is being very generous. Because he's a Bengali, but here he's giving the task to everybody. He doesn't say go da bhumite hoile, you know. He's giving this task to all Indians like that. And then Prabhupada's very nice purport. And later on, Prabhupada goes down and he says, even now the most degraded debauchees are becoming devotees. So, Prabhupada, you know, puts it right on the line who we Westerners are. You know? One devotee, he was many, many, many years ago, he had, you know, some associating with some Indian devotees and Hindi speakers, you know. So he was pushing them because, you know, we have words. We use any language you have, words for the different races that you're competing with, like that, you know. And white people call black people something, and black people call white people something, and, you know, white people call Chinese people, you know. So there's different derogatory terms that you use in terms of different nationalities or different things like that, so on. Or genders, yeah. So this devotee was pushing his Hindi devotee, you know, what is the word that Hindi people use for Westerners, you know, for white guys, when they're not feeling very nice about them. And the devotee wouldn't tell him. So finally he pushed him, and finally the guy told him what the word was. And what it means is those who have the sexual habits of pigs, like that. So that's the kind of, what do you call it, the bottom line view of the Hindi of Indian people, of Western guys. Those who have the sexual habits of pigs, always ready and don't discriminate between their mother, sister, brother, or aunt, or even their piglets. Okay. Yeah. So the purport to this, what Adi 9:41 Prabhu said that, he said, now the worst debauchees, the most fallen debauchees, are becoming devotees, you know, by the service of one Indian. So he says, if one Indian can do this, if so many Indians do this, we can have a wonderful opportunity like that, you know. So a very important part of our whole Sankirtan preaching effort, you know. Again, it, different countries have different karma, you know. It says, Prabhupada says it in the purport. He says it's in India, the land of Varsha, that actually this kind of culture can develop. You know, it's just a natural birthright, the character. I mentioned this several times, but I was mentioning it here because it's all in context. Maybe you can also use it in your sankirtan. I went through the Britannica when it was still a hard copy. It probably hasn't changed much. All the different countries, and it talks about the geography of different countries, their history, their literature sometimes, and economics, like that, things like that, and technology. But only one country in the entire Encyclopedia Britannica that I find where it talks about the philosophy of that country. And it's not even a part of, of course it's India, and it's not even a part of the entry on India, it's a separate entry, it's India, philosophy of, so it's a whole separate entry. And it's detailed. He goes through all the different kinds of bhasyas and commentaries and everything else. It's a big, big discussion even for us to see how much philosophy there is in India. And some people, they say this, oh, there's no philosophy in India. Philosophy began with the Greeks. You know, they say that, you know. Before, India had the oldest superstitions or mythologies, or one of the oldest mythologies. But, you know, philosophy began with the Greeks. But the Britannica talks about it going back, you know, very, very far. You know. So another point here, we've told this before too, maybe you've heard it. There's one joke. It says, in the European heaven, what is it? In the European heaven, the British are the police. The Germans are the mechanics. The French are the lovers, yes. The Swiss are the judges. And the Italians are the cooks. There we go. This is the European heaven. I guess the what do you call it, the heaven, the perfect ISKCON temple. You know, Hansa Duda was German, and he said that Germans make good temple commanders, but they're not sneaky enough, clever enough to become presidents. He says, for that you need a British guy. And the best pujaris is that were French guys, you know, so on. Yeah, put all the Italian guys in the kitchen. You know. So that's one, you know, every country has its character, and that's the European heaven. In the European hell, the British are the crooks, the Germans are the police, the Swiss are the lovers, the French are the mechanics, and the Italians are the judges. So if you know a little bit about European character, you realize this is ridiculous. It's a fact, you know. But in the global heaven, you know, the Indians are the philosophers. I guess in the global hell, the Indians are the mechanics or something like that. Something like that. A couple of things the Indians just aren't good at, you know, like the timekeepers, you know, yeah, so on. So this is a fact. We can look at it. Is that India is the land of philosophy. The Britannica supports this, you know, common appreciation for different cultures, you know, support that different countries have their character. You know. And so Prabhupada, right from the very beginning, was trying to adopt a strategy of inspiring Indians to take it up. You know. But as we know, he wasn't so successful. You know, it was very difficult. Very difficult. You know, almost no success. You know. So he came to the West, and here what happened is that many Indians who come to the West to eat the garbage of technology and economic development, they came in contact, you know, through Prabhupada's Western disciples, and they realized, they woke up, my God, you know. I've heard Prabhupada said, you scratch any Hindu, scratch any Indian, and you'll find a devotee of Krishna. You scratch his skin, scratch any Hindu, you'll find a devotee of Krishna. One of our friends, he's a very big professor, very big professor guy, and he's in Bengal, and he's worshiping Durga, everything else. So one time we were trying to organize some programs with his participation, and he was asking, when is Janmashtami? You know, I won't be able to come during Janmashtami. And I was a little surprised, and I said, but Professor, you're worshiping Durga like that. And he kind of laughed, and he said, Hanuman Swami, you've got to understand, in India, Krishna is everybody's baby. Like that. I even saw a poster in an automobile shop one time in Mathura. It was like one of these calendars, they have in auto shops, So this was a calendar in a Muslim auto repair shop in Mathura a long time ago. And there was Krishna and Balaram sitting down like stealing yogurt or something. But they were totally dressed in Muslim clothes, the little Muslim babies like that. So this is it, India is the land of Krishna consciousness, the land of philosophy, culture. So many things. And Prabhupada says in the purport to Adi 9:41, every Indian believes in reincarnation, believes in karma, has fear of God, like that. And so many things, Probably people who have been there, that when in America, if there's a dead body, they just cover it right up and get it out of sight as quick as they can, It's gone, But in India, it'll sit there for hours. You might put some rocks around it or something, And then finally, maybe have some experiences like this, they'll finally go take care of it and take care of the body, One particular incident I remember was on national television in India. Some big poet had died. And so his body was lying there, he died maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something. And so right away he got his body on some stage, he took it to some prominent place, and the media were coming, and people were coming to the hall to say goodbye. They had a lot of flowers they put around it. And then the president of India showed up, in the news, and he was sitting there, spoke a few words, and then people were sitting on the dais along with the body, maybe six people, and then one of them was the president, and other people were talking. And while other people were talking, the president just got up and walked right over on the cameras and took that guy's head, his dead body, and started adjusting his head and moving his face like that. And so nobody was too disturbed like that, But if you did this in America, people would be flipping out, it was going nuts, he's touching a dead man. But for them, it's not a dead man, it's a dead body. It was so prominent. It's like a Barack Obama going messing around with somebody's face like that, a dead guy's face, so on. My God, So, and also to a candy bar, another keep on going here. It was a big advertisement for this candy bar in Delhi, and it was chocolate on the outside and orange on the inside, and it said, Body and Soul, the best candy bar, like that. So, India used to be. I think it's becoming degraded, so now we can look at the modern situation. And Prabhupada's actually, his technique was effective, by taking the dancing white elephants back, he did start waking up Indians and just getting them to participate. And of course, hippies were our best customers, but some Indians were participating. Rameshwar Singh, he was the first Californian, first life member in California, maybe one of the first in the U.S. in San Francisco. And probably started this life membership program, for in India. He didn't do street book distribution so much there. It came later. Because in India, there you can go to people's houses, you can talk to them intelligently, and they'll participate like that, in a big fashion. So he developed it there. He wanted to develop it, and then now in the modern environment, we've seen that Vaisheshika, for example, in San Jose, is an association there. He's just fixed on book distribution. So San Jose, California, San Francisco is the Silicon Valley, and there's just like unlimited numbers of Indians there because of this industry developing. So he started the whole systematic program in Vaisheshika way, developing it to get them out on Harinam once a month, and then to get them distributing books along with other people at the book table in Harinam, then to go to a book table at totally approved places, with a few more devotees, and then they would be leading that, and then they go door to door with their whole family, maybe a couple families, And so when the whole family, kids, grandmother, everybody else shows up at your door, you can't say, oh, it was a cult, you know. No, it's like, it's a whole different impact upon people in terms of like the people going around and presenting the culture and stuff like that. So they were doing, I'm not sure how much they were, you know, before, but they were doing like a weekend marathon for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, like $7,000 in books in one weekend. And it, so it wasn't just like, they were kind of like getting into the process and being, you know, following the process, which they did, some people. But some people, they just picked it up right at heart. They got, this is the right thing. And they became as good and as self-motivated and self-realized book distributors as anybody in ISKCON had ever been, you know, Western guys. And they make their own schedule, they get out there, they do it like that. So you saw many people, you know, a very effective program in terms of organizing the Indian community in terms of a very systematic way. And it's just very natural for them, you know. Other than that too, also this prasadam distribution. Because Prabhupada said, this age of Kali, you know, the prasadam distribution is more important than distributing money. It's a definite part of the whole Sankirtan and book distribution. So many times, the same way too, Indians love to participate. For example, many times they won't be so generous giving just cash donations, but if you ask them to help us with feeding destitute people, then so many times they'll come right around. They'll give their time and everything else. And they see like, well, this is not going so well. Why, you always have trouble having a vehicle ready for us. And so we haven't got any good vehicle. Said, look, I'll talk to a couple of other Indians and we'll buy a vehicle for you. We'll make the payments like that. And as long as you use it for the service, you can keep it. Okay, you know. So then when they see the necessity, then they donate generously. So it's a very nice process to engage them in different activities like that, the dresses and things like that, karma yoga. And then they'll donate very generously when they see the necessity like that. Other than that, of course, the danger is many people joining because they just take it as their family tradition, and I'm sure what, it even doesn't even fit in exactly as bhakti yoga, but that can be correct, that can be connected in most cases. You know, that can be connected. One of my disciples, Tandavika, he's in South India. He was going to the temple in San Jose, and he said he was just going because it was the closest Hindu temple with his children and family, wife. And he said it was about like, I think 8 months of going every Sunday, everything else, before, and going to some classes, where he finally realized that devotional service meant something other than offering incense. That it meant serving Krishna in this world, you know, which Krishna had created for preaching purposes. So it clicked. Then at that point he became, I guess, kind of basically like the Majjhimadhikari, you know. We saw there, because our president, Radha Balabha, was becoming very disturbed that all the Indians were just coming for prasadam or something like that, and why are we maintaining all this. So I did a little investigation looking, and almost most of them came 10 to 15 minutes before the aarti. And they came. They wanted about a 10 or a 15 minute lecture, hearing about Krishna. And so if you plan the lecture that way, if you started off with your most complicated and sophisticated points in the beginning and got more and more simple as the lecture went on, it matched the audience. So funny. And so then that's what they wanted. They wanted about a 10 or 15 minute discussion, not a whole hour. They wanted to participate in the aarti because it was pious. They wanted to hear the kirtan. And if you worked on it a little bit, they would chant, you know. And afterwards he wanted to take prasad, and then they would give a nice donation. And I saw nobody, one person came during, actually late in the kirtan, and that was only because he was a very regular devotee, very strong, but he had some problem, you know, getting there. So very, very workable situation, it seems, if we have the intelligence about how to try and follow Prabhupada's example. Because then when they wake up, they're so much more qualified than we are. You know, they don't come from the most debauched environment or history or things like that. And intelligence is finer if you take place like that. It's a different body physically, you know. And so then so many ways they can live the process, the Sanskrit. Hari Lila, where we are right now, we're in his house. They started teaching Sanskrit, I think, in the fourth grade. When I was a child, maybe other people remember this too, they were still teaching Latin when I was in, I guess, the seventh and eighth grade. He was still teaching Latin, and that was about the year they stopped it. But so in India, it was the same way. They taught Sanskrit in the schools, if kids wanted to take it, and probably even compulsory for many. So he knows all the meters and the verses and everything else like that. He knows so many things, you know, just from Hindi, you know. So if you can, if these people can be woken up, it's such an advantage. In general, my own experience in India is that ISKCON has become like an accepted religion. You know, like Dayananda Saraswati, what's his group? Forgot the name of it, they'll come back. The Pushti Marg of Radhaswami, so many. So many groups like that. And then what's the other one? Tagore, he's not religious, but Aurobindo, you know. So the Divine Life Society. There's so many groups like that in India, very big religious organizations, like groups like that and so on. And ISKCON has become accepted as one of those. You know? There are kids that have grown up to maybe, what, 30-year-old men now. There are 30-year-old Brijbasis for whom the Angrez Mandir, this is what the Indians in Vrindavan call our temple. You say, what is the temple? Oh, yeah, the Angrez Mandir. Angrez means English, you know. Oh, the English temple. The English temple. And some of them think, it doesn't matter whether you're German, American, French, or Italian, you're all English. You know, some of that is still kind of an impression, like they're very simple people there. So for them, now they're 30-year-old guys, 35-year-old guys who are little babies there who grew up. And for them, the Angrez Mandir has just been a part of the scene, what goes on there, how they do things, you know. So we pretty much in India now, ISKCON is accepted as one established religion, which many nice people belong to, has his character, and also has his international character. Another one of our disciples, Srinivas, his brother was getting married, I think it was in South India. And of course, you know, wedding means like 300 people or 400 people, you know. And so trying to figure out what was going to be the standard for the cooking, you know, onion and garlic or chicken or whatever, you know, what's going to be like that, so on, you know. So finally, he said he was surprised because, you know, the finally everybody talking about it, they said, okay, we'll use the ISKCON standard. And they weren't, you know, members of ISKCON, you know, but the ISKCON standard was known. If you eat in an ISKCON temple, you know, depending on what your preferences of what you're going to eat, that they don't cook with onion, garlic, you know, all this kind of stuff like that. But they do cook with carrots, they, you know, things that some people don't take. You know. So, and then maybe we run a program last May, you know, it was about 14 months ago, but more than that. It was the 500th anniversary of Lord Chaitanya's sannyas, so that's maybe pushing it even more now. Yeah, quite some time ago, maybe 2 years ago, maybe a little less than that. So somehow or other, we were giving a presentation with the Bagh Bazar Gaudiya Math, and that's the one that kind of inherited everything when the big battle. They got most of the temples, whatever. That was the one where they had the beautiful marble on the walls and everything. So very Bengali. All these Bengali people were coming forward to pay for the hall, to pay for the prasad, and you can see very much Bengali religion and much more, you know, traditional than we are in ISKCON, you know. So I asked Bhakti Trumars and everything if it was okay if I participated in the program, I've been invited. And he said, yeah. He said, we're not cooperating, but we're all going the same direction now. For some time they stopped chanting Hare Krishna because it's not in the Chaitanya Bhagavad or Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's kind of a common thing. For seven, 8 years, now they're doing it again. So with our own Indian, you know, family, we're all kind of headed the same way, the same idea, same principles. So as I was presenting it, I had to give a couple addresses, and one the keynote, the chief guest or whatever it was remember his name now, not Narayanam, something Narayanam, and he was former head of the Secret Service, the espionage thing, R.K. Narayanam, yeah, for the government of India. I mean, basically, he was the top spy for the government of India. And so when they retired, they gave him these posts, these honorary posts, like governors. He was governor of West Bengal. And it was incredible. The guy is incredible. It's just when you meet him, you have this desire to confess everything he ever did. Like that. He has this karma. It's just like, you know, when I was 6 years old, I did this and that, you know. So you see this. Everybody has their karma, you know. So anyway, I didn't confess everything I did, you know. But anyway, he was on the platform too, maybe four or five people, and I was talking, making my presentation, and he was looking at me, like, you know, intensely. And he had a guy standing behind him with a machine gun, so I was a little bit nervous about everything. So finally, then he got up and was speaking after I spoke, before all these like aristocratic, you know, leaders of Bengali Calcutta society. And he said, actually, I'm very ashamed. He said, I was supposed to have been born in a kind of pious Hindu family, and Hanuman Swami is coming from this Western tradition. And he said, he knows more about our culture and our philosophy than I do, you know. And he said, right now, I realize that in my life I haven't taken advantage of this Indian heritage that we have as much as I should have. So he said, right now, here in front of all of you, I am making this promise that I'll be more serious about studying the philosophy of Indian saints, and especially the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right there, you know. So that, I think, to kind of finish off here, is my survey of like how what's happening and how Indians are coming out and the preaching and how ISKCON has to deal with this. The other side of the coin is that we're getting more Indians involved, and like I was saying, they can just start making it into a mundane institution where the goal is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, or even worse. You know, for example, some of my disciples say there's this current flowing amongst the big Indian temples now, that if you're a brahmachari and you're agitated, okay, well, if you get married, that means you can't do it almost any service, you can be taught up to your family, everything else. So it's better you go visit one of the girls we know in the village who's, you know, kind of like nice girl approved by us, basically a temple prostitute. And okay, like, you know, once a year or something like that, you can't control yourself, that's okay, that's better. That philosophy is entering in. And so we have this problem. Indian contaminations in philosophy and things can also enter in, as well as the Indian ability to preach and everything else. So it's a new atmosphere. And very much, obviously, ISKCON now hippies are no longer our best customers. In many ways, Indians are our best customers, and we've got to figure out how to deal with this. So Prabhupada's comment, Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India seriously understand such Krishna Kathas. And then, after full realization, which doesn't mean the gopis, it means basically you come to the platform of being initiated devotee. Yeah, preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. So that's my ideas. So any comments, questions, complaints?
Just give me 1 second to press the unmute button. Unmute is off. Okay.
So, Marsh, I have a question. How would we sort of retranslate or adjust or reapply the verse you were referred to off and on throughout your whole talk, where Lord Chaitanya says, Bharta Bhumite Hoila Manusya Janmajar Jamasarata Katari to a paropakar, that those who are born in India, they should preach this message all throughout the world. You also commented that Prabhupada wrote this, very interesting, that he wrote this before he came to America. So, seems like that doesn't just apply to people.
He didn't write Chaitanya Charitamrita before he came to America, but when he's quoting it in the purport, he wrote that, you know.
Right, he was referring to the verse, but so how does that sort of reapply now? It seems like it's mainly the non-Indians that are preaching.
Well, one thing is, of course, that we're taking it forward, that the Prabhupada, he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita much later, right? After he had a lot of experience in the West and everything else. So the purport to that verse is then written, you know, after he has mature experience. And Prabhupada still fired us. It's a fact. And you see all these things I'm mentioning about India, he mentions these things. India has this quality, this character. He says it's much degraded compared to its original condition, but even still, it's the best culture in the world. So that's what I would say, that it's still possible, but it's like Prabhupada says, if you have to, in the original purport, in the Bhagavatam, he says, seriously understand. So we have to create the opportunity where they can, you know, seriously understand. And Vaisheshika, for example, would have like the Sunday feast, more public. Then he started the program every Wednesday evening. And there people were memorizing verses, they were getting up and giving a presentation and rotation. they study like certain sections like that. And, you know, basically you got to like just, you know, clear, okay, what is the standard? You got to be initiated, okay? Got to follow the principles, this and that. And so you see like what your students need, you know? And obviously even amongst Indians are going to be different, different places like that, you know? Mm. So I think it's, you know, very, very realistic. But probably, and at the end of the purport, it probably gives one paragraph, and he says, this, but it's not just Indians, you know? He said this message, the order is there for Lord Chaitanya, for everybody in the world. You know? So I think he was like this, you know, for example, in our Western countries now, there's a joke that many times there's more deities in Mongol Arctic than there are people, you know, so on, devotees. But when I was in Calcutta, it's typically, every morning, Mongol Arctic was like, you know, 150 people, you know, small temple, the temple room. And, you know, it was like almost always young men who were like living in the ashram or trying it out, you know, and really figuring out to dedicate their lives to the preaching in so many ways, expanding, publishing books, writing so many books in the science area like that, in the evolution like that, you know. So I think it's really very practical, but we've got to use our intelligence to see how we're supposed to participate, you know. You know, and of course, you know, you've been in ISKCON and everything else for a long time, and you know, seen different things, and so then you know, 23-year-old Indian boy or something, really, or you know, young ladies, you know, Indian girls coming to for the first time to the West and stuff like that, you know, just so happy to get the association of ISKCON, you know, ladies who've been devotees 25, 35 years and can give them a lot of hints and understanding about what's going on like that. So I say we have a lot to contribute, but yeah, they are good customers, and it's a matter of just figuring out, you know, what kind of community you have and everything else. South America is different because the people, Indians come to English-speaking countries because they speak English. When they go to South America, there's nobody speaking English, you know. So our community there is almost all Sindhis, because Sindhis are very strong business people like that and stuff. So they go because there's a chance to make money, you know, and not so many educated professional people at all, you know, so on. So it's, you know, preaching to Indians in South America is, it's a different thing. It's very much in terms of they want it. They, if you go around before Janmashtami or something begging for a donation shop to shop, you know, they'll give it, you know, you just spread your cloth and just, you know, they'll make nice donations, and then you want to come to Janmashtami and see what you did with your money, and then, you know, like that. So you're preaching to Vaishyas. You know. But in India, now we're preaching to Indians. We're, you know, I'm scholars. You know, we're doing programs with universities and stuff like that. And it's just, and we're directly dealing with people who know Shankara and in his philosophy. And if you want to preach to them, you've got to be able to talk to them in terms of the philosophical basis of these things. You know. But as they convert, man, they, you know, they've read the Bhagavad, we read the Mahabharata 7 times in Sanskrit, you know. Yeah. Sarvabhauma Bharata, 1,000 Sarvabhauma Bhattacharyas. Is that okay?
No, that's nice. Yeah, thank you. That's nice. It also seems like, in a sense, we've also, of course, we were born in a, speaking for most of us listening in our Sangha here, we're born in the West, and we were born in lots of families. But we took another birth. I mean, what is India? India is all about Krishna, ultimately. Of course, it's becoming a little degraded. But we took our second birth in ISKCON, and which is all about Krishna and all about Mahaprabhu. And it seems that that same instruction now applies to all of us because of the birth we've taken. In a sense,
yeah.
higher than Bharatvarsh.
Yeah. We shouldn't be Dvija Bandhus. You know, I mean, I'm a Prabhupada disciple, Prabhu. No, that's Dvija Bandhu. Hey, you know, we should. Like you're saying we should got an advantage, and so we should make our lives perfect. We should understand scientifically. You know, yes.
That's nice. Let's let someone else ask a question. Thank you, Maharaj.
Dhanyavad, Maharaj.
Haribol. Vidangda.
Haribol. Great class. Great purport. I mean, it just set you up.
Great. More and more, I'm really feeling like I'm surrounded by Krishna. and I have to do almost nothing. You know, it's just like he's like watching after me, like, you know, like the Shringadeva licking Prahlad Maharaj and stuff. It's just, and I need it, my God, you know. But I think it's just Krishna's just, you know, realizing how we're getting old, we're stupid, so calm down, sit on my lap, you know.
How about the global hell, the Indian participation is there, the politicians?
Have people go through and
there's so much corruption in the government of India. I mean,
but they do it in a creative way too, you know, how they do it. This is what Prabhupada says, that Muslims and in British both, they liked Indian bureaucrats, you know, administrators, bureaucratic type people. He said because they weren't excessive, you know. If you give like a Russian guy Russian corruption or something like that, you start finding like murders and, you know, and unbelievable sexual things with you know, intense drugs to increase your sexual things and, you know, sadomasochism, all, you know, which you would probably never expect to find that. You never do, you know. I mean, child molestation, everything else amongst these people, but you never find that in Indians even still, you know.
Right. Like, yeah, although they get some bad press, some things happening, but it's the Western influence that's really messing it up, the bad Western influence.
You see, anyway, all these advertisements on the side of the street, and it's all like these things of like boys and girls from the movies, like, and the girls are dressed in a very sensuous fashion, everything else. And then they become disturbed when some girl is gang raped.
Right.
You know? Well, why is it happening? See, you're feeding these people's faces, and then you're surprised when they start acting on it. You know, anyway.
Yeah, I had some videos taken from me on the Nepali border, leaving India.
Ah.
Because and there were videos, originals of Srila Shrita Maharaj giving talks.
Ah.
And because they were all over blue movies.
Uh-huh.
You know, they didn't want porn.
Yeah, yeah.
They wanted to filter the internet too. They, you know, it's but it's unregulated like anything.
Wow.
So yeah, it's bad. And then you get cable television. They can get anything, you know, on cable television. So in satellite dishes, it's sad. Actually, television.
Uh-huh.
I had an Indian, an educated Indian in South India tell me recently in the last year or two when I was there that what the Muslims did during their 600 years of damaging India, what the British did by stealing the wealth of India is nothing compared to the last, you know, 20 years of television.
Yeah, and the government of India subsidizes and pays for television for everybody.
Yeah. And you know what popularized television in India was the Ramayana.
And the Mahabharata Ramayana, yeah.
Yeah, was going to the shops to watch.
So it can be used good. That's the thing too, if you go on India, I mean, how many go on the what's that called, cable?
Yeah.
There's, I don't know how many, 5, 6, 7, 24-hour, you know, 24-hour spiritual channels, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Showing like to us pujas and sacrifice, live sacrifices, or just like continuous, you know, Krishna Katha things. You know?
They have the
Gujarati people. The Gujarati community have a lot of, like, for example, one girl. She's a single girl. She wears saffron. She must be about 23 now, and she was like, you know, a gospel singer type girl, you know, and bhajan singer. And she's grown up. And I hear her preaching in Hindi with Gujarati with maybe 400 people in the audience, 500, 600. And she's going on, blah, 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 Swami Prabhupada, blah, 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 Swami Prabhupada, blah, blah, blah. And Prabhupada's right there. And they invite ISKCON devotees to come and to participate in the 4 or 5 day long program. I know some of them, you know. So there's also, you know, that high side too, that I think some ways too that people see the bad result, but also in some people that it makes them more convinced that, hey, we got to stop this, you know. When they see it actually happening and stuff, and they become convinced to change it. So, and ISKCON, again, and also the thing is too, is even if ISKCON is becoming, you know, continuous temples opening and everything else, philosophy going out, books going out, and it may not that we become the king of India, there's so many other groups are starting to. I even saw Ramakrishna people. The guy got up and said Ramakrishna made Indian culture the greatest culture in the world because he showed us that Indian culture preaches that we're all God. Okay. Then after that, the Gaudiya Math guy got up and said, we're not all God, we're all you know, Lord Chaitanya established Bhagavatam, and politely. Then after that, the Ramakrishna guy was talking, he changed it to, we're all godly, you know, like that. You know? So everywhere, in Prabhupada's influence and stuff. Right on the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Yeah, no, it's true. Everybody's ramping it up, including the Christians. It's like the soul of India is up for grabs because of it is because they're so disgusted with the corruption of the central government in Delhi.
Oh God! Yeah.
And it's in the news every day. They appointed some guy to head up a committee to go after the corruption, and he got arrested for corruption. So yeah. Anyway, but something stood out in what you said in your talk. I really liked it. Scratch an Indian and you get a devotee of Krishna.
It's Prabhupada's comment, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded... Oh, it's Prabhupada's comment, yeah.
Oh, yeah, not me. Yeah, Prabhupada said, scratch any Indian, you'll find a devotee of Krishna.
And he must have said something like that in this lecture in Madras. And a lady at the end of the talk tried to... you know, give some balance or say something. She was almost challenging what Prabhupada said and said, India's changed. You know, she's like, you know, offering a counterpoint. And then Srila Prabhupada, he said, every Hindu observes Janmashtami. And then there was spontaneous applause because the audience recognized that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I Googled that because I was looking for something connected with that. And Prabhupada repeated that on his world tour in Canada and other places, uh-huh. wherever there were Indians in the audience.
Yeah.
Srila Prabhupada says that Westerners, to their credit, they're running towards Krishna. But Prabhupada said they're far away. Whereas the Indians, although they have their back to Krishna, were closer.
Yeah.
So if they could get turned, if they could get awakened, and even at Srila Prabhupada's first meeting with his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he was immediately told, you should preach this Lord Chaitanya's message in English, you know, in the West, right? So then Prabhupada, who was influenced at the time by Gandhi's followers, counter with the idea, first we have to, we're not in a dignified position, we're subjugated by the British, so if we're going to be taken seriously, we got to get out of that first. And then Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's famous reply was, no, this Lord Chaitanya's movement is transcendental to all these politics. And then Srila Prabhupada accepted that. And then, after Prabhupada's unprecedented success in America, at some point, Srila Prabhupada saw how powerful it would be to bring his disciples to India to preach, because though the Indians wouldn't listen to him years before, or some of his godbrothers in Jhansi, they had limited success, like you said, it was a hard sell, Gaudiya, you know, Siddhanta. Because they were attracted by the opulence of the West, the opulence of America and England, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he also saw that. So you conquer the West, you convert Westerners, you bring them to India, and then you wake up India. Then they listen, and then you wake them up. So, yeah. And like you were saying in your talk, it's their culture. And so I think that really was the, you know, I've seen other things, and I can't find them right now, but I've read things in Prabhupada's purports that make me think like that. That was the plan, the end around. You go, you can...
Oh, definitely, yeah, that was, yeah.
And then you come, bring them back to India, and then you wake up India, and then India wakes up the world.
What's the guy's name? Not T.S. Eliot, the other one. Maybe it was Joyce, James Joyce, you know, big historian guy. And he's describing how things were happening, and he said, "And the West shall shake the East awake."
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 12:35. I gotta go here. We're gonna go to a program with a bunch of Indians. One devotee finished off his psychiatric degree here. His wife is finishing hers next year. And because all his friends are young Indian doctors, everything else like that. So we're gonna do a program with them. And you know, so you get a lot of, like you're saying, a lot of people saying, "Oh, Swamiji, these things are past. It is all mythology." You know, so you really got to be able to preach in that area. You know, mm-hmm. So I think it's a very nice area we should learn to preach, but it's not the only area. There are all kinds of other people, you know, in different areas like this. But I think it is something very essential part of our whole sort of profile is being able to appreciate that India is land. Prabhupada says India is the land where Varna Ashram and Krishna consciousness can take place. You know.
Right.
So, Mr. Ramananda.
Dandavats Maharaj, I didn't get a chance to ask you. I wanted to ask you about the Bhakti Yoga Club that we have here in Hilo, but could I just send you an email then, since you have to go?
Go ahead, yeah. We have a couple minutes, yeah. Okay, real quick.
I was thinking about what you said about how hippies are no longer our best customers, and I can't really figure out who exactly to preach to, because I put on some dinners this last semester, and we did a Vedic astrology and dinner, and three people came, and the prasadam ended up going to the security and the janitors, right? So then we did one at Valentine's Day about attraction and spiritual attraction, and same thing, three people showed up. Then we did one, the last one, and we put so much effort into advertising, but the flyer said Yoon, yoga, and dinner, and I finally got 25 people to come. So I was wondering if it's now including students and professors, and I was wondering if now it's like the psychologists that are more interested in yoga or bhakti yoga.
I what I hear, like book distributors, they say the three words are yoga, reincarnation, and I think vegetarianism, and those are three areas that people have interest in. Yoga, I know we same thing too. No programs. We did a program on meditation, and we the hall. You know, people hanging out the doors, everything else like that. And so meditation. One big guy said, because nobody has any private time now, and everything you're just locked in the public world. You know, so that's why people won't get out of their cars. I mean, 80% of the cars have one person in them. Why? Because it's the only chance you had to be alone. Yeah. So everybody's looking for private life, private pleasures, drugs, and that kind of stuff. And so meditation and things like that, you know, and the kind of the secret life of the so-and-so, you know, that's another thing where people are attracted. So I'm working on this thing on meditation and stuff like that. And the thing is, too, we can deliver the goods. You know, we just got to put it in a form where people are appreciating. And, you know, so meditation is one area, you know. It's just, you know, kind of somebody just look around and see what people are interested in, you know. I mean, people are interested in superheroes, like that. So you go ahead and have pick some really good progressive movies, which kind of lead right into what we're talking about, and have a movie night, you know, like that, and so on, you know. Yeah, that's nice, easy to do, easy to maintain, and it's fun if you can watch the movies yourself. You know, I watched the. It's really bizarre because I said, is it there? I looked on the YouTube, and sure enough, it was the whole Vishnu Puran series. You know, is there? It's Hindi, but it's with English subtitles. And I saw a little bit of it, so I went through and maybe six things and just fast forward and the whole thing about the story of Dhruva from the Vishnu Puran. And it's very nice. You know, some of the things that they changed some of the things. So today I was finishing off our Bhakti Bhai Baba thing. And it says anybody who reads this Dhruva Katha gets all these benefits, especially if he hears it on Dwadasi. And yesterday was Dwadasi. So anyway, pray to Krishna. Krishna will tell you who to preach to. We'll set it up.
Okay, thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna, this is Mahesh Prabhu. Thank you, Maharaj, for your class. Just wanted to make a comment respect to preaching programs, because we have had many successful preaching programs here in Kona. And basically, we have had events with over 75 people. For Radhana Swami, we got over almost 200 people. On any regular program here in our house, without really advertising much, we get at least 20, 25 people. So what we do, our technique, of course, is music, beautiful music, but the main thing is prasad. You really have to advertise the prasad. People will come for a good dinner. So you have to use
them first,
prasad.
If you try that in the Philippines, though, you'll have trouble. Yeah. Yeah. Because they know we offer our food and everything, and they won't take prasad unless they know you really well. Yeah. 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 Where are you?
But here in Hawaii, prasadam.
Yeah.
They like food and they like dinner. And at one point, you know, it takes so much work to make this prasad, and I was thinking, well, we should minimize the prasad, we shouldn't have so many preps. And then my son came and said, no, you got to have as much prasad as possible. I agree, we got to have the best possible prasad. Prabhupada says,
who will not go where there's good food and good music?
Yeah. It works. But then
last question. You got 4 minutes here.
But I have a question for you, Maharaj.
Okay, yeah.
Why did Lord Shiva give his sword to Ashwatthama?
I think he got it much earlier. He didn't give it to him at that point. It was a benediction he got earlier. Like that. Maybe 15 years before or 20 years before he got this sword, and it was there as one of the things he had. That's my impression. He didn't give him the sword to go and chop the heads off of Draupadi's babies. Yeah.
Wasn't that maybe because it was an arrangement of the Supreme Lord to...
It could have been, but again, I think it was just something, a benediction that Ashwatthama had from before. You know, so that the Lord Shiva's participation wasn't really a matter of like... You know, that at the exact moment that it happened, you know, like that. Okay, so thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah. Hare
Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj.
Great class.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Namaskar.
Namaskar.
All glory to Shri Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.